This is the Kielbasa King Sports Extravaganza.
Hey, 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 Yakshamash.
Club to you too, or whatever.
You know, really, I love your style. I love the way you edit things together. Well, thanks for noticing. It's a real pain.
We welcome to the show Christian Leitner.
Yeah, I'm proud of my heritage, and my mother used to make a lot of delicious meals, kapusta, kumpi, pierogi, all that good stuff. I put sour cream on everything, and so a lot of Polish tradition there.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for dealing with our technical difficulties. Jacques Shamash. This is Jake Kokorowski. We got the Polish Rifle, Scott Wisniewski. Welcome to another edition of the Kielbasa King Sports Extravaganza, brought to you by Bucky's Fifth Quarter, and obviously brought to you by Rent College Pads, our sponsor. Great to have them on board. And it is a wild evening coming up. Lots to talk about. At the bottom of the hour, you got Jeremy Schmidt from Bucksketball.com talking some Milwaukee Bucks, their 2015-16 season. The news about possibly Dwight Howard at the trade deadline, if he would have opted in, how he would have been. The development of Jabari Parker and Giannis Antetokounmpo and Chris Middleton, and among others. We'll talk about that. We'll talk some NFL Combine down the road. We got some Milwaukee Brewers talk with spring training opening up this week. And the Brewers getting, I think it's two victories in spring training today. Maybe some Hank the Dog conspiracy theories. And we'll talk a little bit more about that just in a little bit. But first, Scotty, how is your week going, my friend?
Oh, it's been a crazy week, but... I guess all right. It could always be worse. Had that little bit of return to winter, and then, of course, I see next week that we're going to get into the 60s, so that'll at least feel good. But otherwise, everything's been well. It's been an interesting sports week, too, as we get closer to all the worlds overlapping with baseball starting now and the football off season, and, of course, hockey, basketball, and NCAA playoffs. It's an interesting time of the year.
It absolutely is, and it's been an interesting time, to say the least, for the Wisconsin Badgers, especially the men's basketball team. At one point, 9-9, I think, if I'm not mistaken, 1-4 in Big Ten play. Next thing you know, come back. Winners of 11 of their last 12. Vaulted now into different positions, different seedings, I should say, according to whoever you're looking at. I think Zach Heilprin from ESPN Wisconsin noted that the Badgers would move up in his seeding tonight. And then Jerry Palm from CBS ranked them, has them up there. They're no longer pretty much a bubble team. Lenardi just said that tonight, according to Zach Heilprin on ESPN Wisconsin, that Wisconsin's likely to be a sixth seed, depending upon what happens this evening in his latest bracket. But really, to kind of break this all down, we have our basketball manager for Bucky's Fifth Quarter, the all-awesome. You can find him on Twitter at HoopsMarinara. It is Phil Mitten. Phil, happy Thursday. Thanks for popping on such short notice. And if we were to tell you when Greg Gard took over in that impromptu way that he did in the middle of December, and say that he would take the team to a record, was it 13-14-5, and on this 11-12 winning streak that they have going in, how crazy would I have sounded to you?
Good evening, guys. It would have sounded pretty crazy at the time, just based on how inconsistent Wisconsin was the first half of the year. Winning 11-12 is tough to do for any club, let alone a young group like this. But under Gard's watch, they have grown up in a hurry. It's been fantastic to watch.
You know, Phil, this team, I know they have to have a couple dominoes fall their way and win their own game on Sunday, could be a three seed or, you know, three or four seed in the tournament, the Big Ten tournament, I should say, that starts next week. And again, a team that I was disappointed in the non-conference season, thought they should have won a few more games, even though they had lost some huge stars from last year. But the fact that they were able to turn it around, put themselves in that position where they could actually get a couple extra days off leading into their first game in the Big Ten tournament, is amazing. What's been the biggest factor? I mean, obviously the team's playing better, but can you point to two things, three things maybe that are different now than they were 12 games ago?
Well, I don't think any one huge thing jumps out at you when you look through the games. I guess a common theme is that different people have stepped up when they've needed to step up, whether that be, you know, Bronson Koenig having a good game when he was kind of in a little rut prior to this run, or, you know, Ethan Happ having another monster game. Khalil Iverson has popped off in a couple of big games and then kind of faded back to the background. Ilikainen making shots. Vito Brown's shooting is probably the one constant. He's been on fire from three-point land. His confidence looks sky high right now. And so, you know, you can debate how much of that you want to attribute to going back to the swing offense, but there's no doubt that since returning from a little injury he had, Vito Brown has been a major part of Wisconsin's offense, and that has propelled them on this winning streak.
We're with Phil Mitten here on Bucky's Fifth Quarter, the Kielbasa King Sports Extravaganza, brought to you by Rent College Pads. And you mentioned, you know, Vito Brown, just some of the production, but you have to give, obviously, Greg Gard a lot of credit, and he's been rewarded with, from what a report by the Milwaukee Journal-Sentinel's Jeff Patricus, a report from today saying that Wisconsin's going to offer Greg Gard a long-term contract. What, you know, you mentioned going back to some swing, doing other stuff. Greg Gard, Big Ten Coach of the Year, and just how, and maybe people don't understand, just maybe it's just because of the precedent that's been set with Bo Ryan and the winning ways ever since, really, he's, you know, consecutive and consistent winning ways. But what job has Greg Gard done for the Wisconsin Badgers men's basketball team?
Yeah, it's just been a phenomenal job. Even if you have all the pieces in place and a stable program, just to carry that on and continue to win in what's been a very good year in the Big Ten, a lot of talented teams throughout the league, especially in the upper half. But then on top of that, doing it with a club that lost so much and has so many young pieces, it's depending on guys learning new roles. You can't say enough about what Gard has done, taking that foundation, a lot of the philosophies from Bo Ryan, but yet showing his own little touches here and there, a few wrinkles he's inserted or ways he's deviated from Bo Ryan, such as, you know, how quick is his hook with turnovers or how often does he bring guys back in with two fouls, stuff like that. That's been very impressive. And I know a lot of people probably have made up their minds, certainly among fans and maybe media members too, on who Coach of the Year is. But I'd say Gard is coaching for that award on Sunday against Purdue. If he can pull an upset against Purdue, it's awfully hard to vote for someone other than him. So I think right now it's down to him and Tom Crean, considering what's happened at Iowa.
So when you look at the Big Ten, obviously, the top half of the conference is still great. They're obviously a top three conference. They're still a power conference. This year, the bottom of the conference, maybe not as strong as it's been in the past, but when you look at the tournament, and I don't expect you to be Joe Lenardi or play bracketologist, but how many teams from this conference do you think end up in the tournament?
I guess I would say... I haven't counted them up. I don't think Ohio State would get in. So that leaves Michigan, Wisconsin, Purdue, Maryland, Iowa, Indiana. I'm probably missed Michigan State. So you're looking at seven possibly there. I don't have in front of me who Michigan plays. That would be the one bubble team, and I think a lot of projections have them still in at this point. So getting seven in would, you know, that's a good year for any league, of course. So no different with the Big Ten. I would go with seven at this point.
And, yeah, especially seven having a – with the fact that you have Minnesota and Rutgers in this conference right now is a testament right there to the Big Ten strength, with just how bad they've played. And I know you had fun also with the Daily Gopher with them earlier this week after just doing the grilling there. But, and our colleague Kurt Hogue talked, he wrote this nice piece up. I don't know if you had I'm sure you had a chance to, you previewed it and you published it. It just seems like the seeding for the Big Ten tournament that's coming up, and obviously Wisconsin does play Purdue coming up on Sunday, like you said. And where do you see Wisconsin possibly being seeded in this tournament? And is there a seed in the Big Ten tournament that's optimal for their chances to make a run to become the tournament champions?
I mean, I've looked at it a little bit, and basically the thing I keep coming back to is even if they beat Purdue, they could get as high as a number two seed there. But what you don't want to see if you're a number two seed is a number three seeded Michigan State, because that's the one team who's as hot or hotter than the Badgers right now, just playing incredible basketball, as Wisconsin well knows from their last meeting. So there are a number of scenarios where that could happen, and then you're looking at your second Big Ten tournament game going back up against them. Odds aren't super great that you'd make a deep run if you have to face Michigan State early. But so the Michigan State-Ohio State game coming up will be big as far as seedings and who would be seen by the Badgers later on down the road. Other than that, the 2, 3, 4 seeds, those all are kind of interchangeable. It's kind of amazing how stuff is still up in the air with only a few games left to go, and I'm not sure how the results tonight have changed anything. Maryland needed to lose out for Wisconsin to get a 2 seed without beating Purdue, and I believe they destroyed Illinois already today. So looks like Wisconsin will need to beat Purdue to get up as high as the 2 seed, and obviously that'll be a tall task for them at Mackey.
You know, in this day and age of projecting ahead and 24-hour sports networks and internet news everywhere, it's never too early to look past the task at hand. And I saw an article that projected next year's Badgers team to be a top 10, easily a top 10 team, and maybe even a top 5 preseason pick. Now, again, we haven't even played the Big Ten tournament yet. We haven't even seen this team play in the NCAA tournament yet. But people are making that prediction based on what they have coming back and how this team is gelled. As ridiculous as it sounds, let's just look in our crystal ball and tell me where you think this team, how they're going to look preseason-wise heading into next year.
Yeah, that's a great point. I just the other day looked at some of the Big Ten teams. Who's young out there? Who's going to be stacked next year with Wisconsin? Obviously one of the ones leading the way. And obviously the big question over the offseason will be Nigel Hayes. What's he going to do? Is there an NBA team or two that's giving him an indication that they'll draft him, in which case he'll leave, I would imagine. But even without him, you're looking at another probably top 15, top 20 preseason team. And you remember they've got two kids ineligible this year, whether for NCAA reasons or an injury holding them back from this freshman class, that are going to add much-needed shooting talent to next year's team. And that being Brevin Pritzel and Andy Van Vliet. So even though they haven't signed anybody in the freshman class, you're counting on everybody being a year better, getting a lot of experience learning how to win as they've done down the stretch here, and then adding a couple of very talented pieces. you know, the future is really bright. The one, you know, thing that obviously a lot can still happen, you know, we can see how guard coaches in the tournament setting, we haven't seen that yet. Is guard a guy who's going to overthink himself in the off season and tinker with stuff we haven't seen? That's uncharted waters for him. So, you know, anything's possible, but I think based on what we've seen here, Wisconsin's going to get the same respect in the preseason polls as they did probably with Bo Ryan at the helm.
And Phil, I mean, with that, predictions for Sunday as we let you go and get back to your, I know we were talking before the show, your tacos, and hopefully the wait is worth the food that you, you know, the taste is delightful with the preparation they put forth there. But your predictions for Sunday and heading into the Big Ten tournament.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough one, like I said. You know, Badgers are the hotter team, but again, Purdue was just too big, too physical in the first meeting. Even though I thought the Badgers played relatively well, this is way back at the beginning of the season. You know, so it was a long time ago. But I'll say this. If Alex Ilkanen can find his outside shot again, rediscover that, I think the Badgers can pull off another upset. The Road Warriors they've been over the last few years, that can continue, I think, if they can get another big hit in their outside shots, because I think they're just brimming with confidence right now. So, and who's to say what happens in the Big Ten tournament there? I feel confident with the Badgers going up against just about anybody but Michigan State right now. But with that said, I'd love to see them get another crack at the Spartans.
Phil, as usual, my friend, always wonderful to have you on. And we'll be in touch soon, obviously, coming up with NCAA tournament time. We have the ability to, you know, obviously, whatever happens on Selection Sunday, we'd love to have you back on. And we'll talk to you down the road, my friend.
Yeah, sounds great, guys. It's Qdoba time.
Sounds good, guys. Phil Mitten, follow him on Twitter, @HoopsMarinara on Twitter. And, of course, here on the Kielbasa King Sports Extravaganza, brought to you by Rent College Pads. And today's show is brought to you by Rent College Pads. We just want to thank our presenting sponsor for their support of the Kielbasa King Sports Extravaganza. Finding off-campus housing has always been a chore until now. Browse tons of properties on Rent College Pads today. They have all the best apartments and houses around campus and in Madison. Find your next place on Rent College Pads today.
Where do we want to go? We could talk a little Packers. We could talk some Combine, which isn't never really my favorite subject. We could go. Why don't we go Packers and then lead into the Bucks? Because a couple interesting news and noteworthy things coming out of Green Bay. Obviously, signing Mason Crosby
yep.
to a 4-year deal is huge, and the announcement that Julius Peppers will be back for another year.
Absolutely. With Crosby, obviously a good deal. The Packers doing what they do best. And that is simply just re-signing the free agents that they want to keep that are their own, that have come from from the team. And you're looking at that, the simple fact that Mason Crosby, the all-time leading scorer of the Green Bay Packers, they re-signed him, which is a great signing, especially with the years that he's had recently. And, let me just take a look, see if we can find the terms of the deal really quick. But re-sign him. There's talks, obviously, Julius Peppers coming back. LaTroy Guyon. I mean, they're doing what they're supposed to do, right?
And I just wanted to say, too. Okay, so maybe this year the Packers will be more active in free agency. Maybe they won't again, and everybody will get mad like they always do. But again, when they do go free agent route, you know what they did with Woodson? When they signed Peppers, I sat here on this show and said, if he gets 2 good years, it was a win for the Packers. He got 2 good years and a third year. They didn't even, I thought it would be 2 when they cut him. But, again, so it was a win when Ted Thompson delves into free agency, it's usually a win, and that's why I think it frustrates some Packers fans more that he doesn't do it more often. But, hey, I mean, he's hit on the ones that he's swung for.
Yeah, I mean, he's following the plan. He's going to draft. I mean, and you're looking at some of the – I know the Chargers, I believe, just released one of their inside linebackers. And I know they're – I mean, you're looking at the – and we've talked about it kind of ad nauseum, but what this team needs. And, inside linebacker, you're looking at a tight end that can stretch the field. I don't think you're going to find a tight end that's going to really stretch the field that's in free agency or maybe in the draft you have a better chance of. And I know – there's a tight end from Stanford. There's also the Arkansas's tight end. Their names escape me at the moment, which makes me feel bad. But with those two, those might be the best options. But even an inside linebacker, if a guy like Reggie Ragland from Alabama, Badger fans remember him quite well from the kickoff classic back in September, and the way he led the national championship, Alabama Crimson Tide to that national title. Those are kind of like the big ones, I would say. We'll see if they, if he hits it. I don't think you'll find it in a tight end necessarily that'll fit that bill, but maybe that, inside linebacker, maybe they fill that in free agency and then maybe draft someone lower.
That's what I was thinking. Like, they have three real needs, and then they have some other things that they could use upgrades in. You can always use more D-backs, and more defensive linemen. So those are more, depth spots. They need an inside linebacker. They need an offensive tackle, and they need a tight end. If they address two of those needs in free agency, I don't think Packer fans have a right to be upset or to be angry about anything. If they address one of those, but it's a high-profile splash, I think Packer fans should be fairly happy. I'd like to see them address one of their three biggest needs in free agency and one of their three depth needs in free agency. So sign two quality, high-impact free agents. Shut the doubters up, and you'll make your team better, which is really more important than shutting up the doubters.
Yeah, I'm wondering, I don't know what else I'm just trying to think, what else they can do. I mean, the team, obviously you're getting back a good Jordan Nelson, which obviously underneath surgery you're always worried about, but you saw some development from Janice. You saw some development, obviously, out of Aberderis, especially with Janice and Aberderis against the Cardinals, and the Packers still came close to beating the Cardinals. In
right,
Arizona.
And you have talented Montgomery, who we haven't seen even the surface of what he can do yet. A question mark in Davante Adams, because
right.
Again, a talented guy who just struggled. You'll have, if Nelson's back even at 95%, that makes Cobb more effective. So I think you don't want to push the panic button on receivers, because I heard names being thrown out there like, what about this guy? What about this guy? And then cut who? I mean, it's a pretty good chance, or more than likely, James Jones won't be back, okay? And they'll probably draft a wide receiver in the fourth round, fifth round, whatever. But my point is, if you sign a guy, at what cost? Who do you get rid of? Janice? Do you get rid of Aberderis? Do you get rid of Davante Adams? I know that Packer fans are going to say yes, but the Packers aren't going to say that. He's a third-year player. So at what cost do you sign a higher-profile free agent? At whose expense? So I don't see them going. They'll draft a player there and see if he can beat out somebody at one of the last two or three receivers on the roster. But I can't see that they're – I don't know. I can't see that they're going to go beyond that.
And, it'll be, like I said, I think they're doing the right thing. The salary cap is up to about $155 million, according to reports out there. So they'll have some money to spend, but maybe they bank it like they've started rolling over some of the money for you're looking at, next season. Ted Thompson's always not looking at just that next season, but the season after and the season after that, where you have your offensive linemen obviously need to be addressed. Among other players, and we'll see if they make that splash. Other than that, let's talk real quick about the Brewers, if you can. I mean, and obviously you're excited, and I think that's a big thing coming up. And I know you and I talked about it a little offline about this Hank the Dog conspiracy of whether or not of our SB Nation cousins at Brew Crew Ball putting out a post about Hank the Dog being an imposter or a new Hank, and the Brewers didn't tell us. Apparently it's gotten to the point where mainstream media, where the Milwaukee Brewers are actually holding a press conference to discuss Hank One, as they call Hank. So we'll see. I mean, is it such a big deal, or is this something like extremely silly, Scotty? Scotty, can you hear me? All right, folks. It looks like we may have some technical difficulties. Everything is flowing well on my end. Scotty, are you there, brother? All right, we're going to give Scotty one more time to give him a quick call in. Apparently, I can't hear him for some odd reason. Scotty, are you there? This is Great at Brown Live. Live out here on Blog Talk Radio, and I am not able to hear him. Let's give him one more time on that. But other than that, you know, it's the Milwaukee Brewers. Let me know.
Hi, you have reached the cell phone of Scott Wisniewski.
And that is not the case there, folks. So on that note, we're a couple minutes before the bottom of the hour. What we're going to do real quick. Oh, there he is. Got you there, brother? And for some odd reason, there he is. Now I can finally hear you.
I was here the whole time. Like, I could hear everything you were saying.
That is some weird stuff, man. I couldn't even hear a single thing you were saying.
Were crystal clear. Crystal clear. Like, I'm like, well, did I lose signal? Did my call drop? No, you were, like, crystal clear. I don't know what that was all about, but... Anyway, the question was about Hank the Dog and the controversy, right? That was
right.
That was okay. I think it's silly. I understand that it's going to be a rough year, and because of that, they might be looking for. But this early in training camp, like, there's a lot of. You don't run out of stories till like week three of spring training. Like, there's a lot of things you could write about. The center field race, Brett Phillips. The pitching staff, the farm system. I mean, there's a lot of things you could be writing about in the first week of spring training. It just seemed like the timing was just odd and weird.
It was. I will say, I mean, on that note, with what you and I have seen and other things where, like you said, there are some position battles. The Brett Phillips laugh, by the way, is something that I will continue to watch each day and just laugh hysterically at. But, I will also say, too, that, with that, the story and just some of the response from maybe the media, I don't know. It's just one of those things where we'll see what they say. Maybe Brew Crew Paul is onto something and they've stumbled upon this, but we'll leave it at that. But obviously it's an exciting, at least it'll be exciting for the Brewers where it comes to the fact that there will be some young talent showing up this year. You mentioned Phillips at some point, Arcia at shortstop, not necessarily right off the bat, obviously, but there's some young talent there. There's some abilities to see this team rebuild. Obviously it's only spring training, but they played against the University of UW Milwaukee a couple a day or so ago, and then also they won a couple of split squad games this afternoon down in that nice sunny Arizona that's not 30 degrees out.
Here's a story they could write about: the Brewers have the lowest payroll in baseball. By quite significantly, by almost $10 million. However, you mentioned earlier about the salary cap in football going up to about $155 million. 8 Major League Baseball teams and only have 25 men on the roster, mind you. 8 Major League Baseball teams would have exceeded the NFL salary cap at this point in the season.
Wow. Very nice.
Kind of crazy, huh? Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say.
So I tell you, it's funny. I don't care. It's not my money. I always thought it was funny, though, how football is probably out of the major sports, the most damaging, physically damaging sport with the shortest careers and the least amount of guaranteed money. And they've blown out, their salaries are just blown out of the water by Major League Baseball and the NBA, like, every year. It's just, it's amazing.
Oh, yeah. No, it's, I agree.
and one last thing about Hank, though, too, this Hank story. The Hank story has been stupid to me from the first day it broke. It really was. It was a created story in my mind to get some buzz around a team that didn't have high hopes. And all of a sudden, that team started out of the gate looking like world beaters, and then they had the epic collapse 2 years ago. But I just never got the Hank stuff. I mean, it's cute if you met, like, oh, hey, Hank, but the amount of coverage that dog has gotten is borderline ridiculous, if you ask me. Just ridiculous. So the fact that we've now got a counter Hank story or a Hank conspiracy story or an anti-Hank story is just as silly as the Hank craze from the beginning in the first place.
Yeah, it's, hey, marketing, money, it happens. It's a revenue generator, especially when things go south. So,
in fact, I'm upset that I just spent 3 minutes talking about it. What else could I have done with those 3 minutes? What I could have found a cure for some disease or saved somebody from a burning building or I don't know. I could have done something with those 3 minutes that I'll never get back now.
On that note, we'll talk obviously some more Brewers. We'll hope to get ourselves a Brewers correspondent in down the road, especially with the season comes up. How about we say we talk some Bucks? How does that sound?
It sounds good to me.
All right, guys. We're going to take one quick break, come back, talk Milwaukee Bucks with Jeremy Schmidt of Bucksketball here on the Kielbasa Kings Sports Extravaganza, brought to you by Brent College Pads. Welcome back to the Kielbasa Kings Sports Extravaganza, brought to you by Rent College Pads and a proud part of Bucky's Fifth Quarter. This is Jay Kukarowski, bottom of the hour. You got the Polish Rifle, Scott Wisniewski. And yeah, we haven't had a big chance to really have the opportunity to talk some Bucks. We've been so obsessed with the National Signing Day back in early February. We've talked Badgers basketball. And obviously talking NFL at the end of the season and combine and all that fun stuff and needs. You know, we haven't had a chance to really talk about the Milwaukee Bucks. And with that in mind, especially with everything going on, the Bucks, turning up a little bit more. And right now, they're just about, from what I looked at just a little bit ago, about 6 games out of the 8th and final playoff seed. We welcome on Jeremy Schmidt from Bucksball.com. He's right there, part of the Hoop Network. Jeremy, thanks for joining us. And kind of going straight into it, the Bucks right now, obviously they lose to the Pacers last night, 104-99, but had a pretty impressive win earlier in the week against Sam Dekker and the Houston Rockets, 128-121. What's this Bucks team been about the past 10 games, the past month, in terms of just improving and also just fighting for some playoff spots?
Well, first of all, I didn't realize Sam Decker was getting lead billing for the Houston
Rockets. Yeah.
What a big moment for him.
It's
very
a Wisconsin
exciting.
Based blog. I have to say Sam Decker. Scotty knows. I know Scotty gets agitated a little bit with me, but it's always something with me. You know, if it was Frank Kaminsky or John Luehr, it'd be the same way. But that's just maybe the Wisconsin leanings with Bucky's this quarter. But, yeah. Yeah,
was
welcome.
But, yeah, as far as the Bucks go, I think when you talk about the last 9 or 10 games, the big story with them, pretty much since right before the All-Star break, has been the play of Jabari Parker and the play of Giannis Antetokounmpo. Giannis has been good all season, but at this point, Jabari is starting to come into his own a little bit. Right before the All-Star break, the Bucks moved Greg Monroe and Michael Carter-Williams to the bench, and they kind of handed over the reins of the point guard position to Giannis. So since Giannis has been playing point guard and him and Jabari have been kind of leading the starting lineup alongside Chris Middleton, Jabari's been averaging just about, I believe, over 20 points a game. Giannis has had 2 triple-doubles. He's been moving the ball. He's been very assertive on offense. And Middleton keeps in that, you know, mid-20s range, hitting threes, being able to create for himself and a little bit more for others. So those three have really come on over the past 9 or 10 games, which has been especially encouraging given that Parker had really struggled earlier in the season. I think he's had now 20 or more points in 5 of his last 7 games. And before that, he only had 20 or more points once this season. So it's been quite a turnaround. And I think this is exactly what people were hoping to see out of Jabari Parker as he got more comfortable returning from the injury.
Now, Jeremy, I tend to have the reputation of being more pessimistic. And I do think the future is bright for the Bucks. And I love watching Giannis and Jabari, but the one thing I can't get over, and this is not second guessing because Jake will attest to it. I was upset about it when the trade was made. Michael Carter-Williams, I don't think it's a coincidence that they played better with him on the bench or not in the lineup at all. So going forward, A, what do the Bucks do long-term in the offseason? Are they going to try to move Michael Carter-Williams? And B, what is the biggest issue? Because to me, it's a red flag when a team like Philadelphia, whether they're tanking or not, trades away a guy that was the top rookie the year before. There's obviously something about his game or something about things we don't see on the court that has affected the team negatively since he was acquired and has just basically made him very inconsistent in his now one full season with the Bucks.
Yeah, I mean, the big knock on him has always been that he's been a very poor shooter. And this season he's actually improved as a shooter, but he's kind of, I guess he's gotten a little bit worse overall, and that's kind of concerning. If he's probably never going to be a great shooter. He's always going to be at best an average shooter. He's probably for another few years at the minimum going to be a below average shooter. So if he's a below average shooter and he's not improving in those other facets of the game, if he's not getting better as kind of a leader on the court, if his court vision is not improving, if he's turning the ball over too much, if he's using too many possessions for a guy who is a bad shooter, those are all bad signs. And it doesn't seem like he's made much progress in any of those areas this season. When they made the trade, I'll admit I wasn't all that excited about Carter Williams either. I wasn't really sold on Brandon Knight being the point guard of the future for the Bucks, so it didn't seem like they were really shooting themselves in the foot to much of an extent when they were acquiring him. It was kind of – they had to make a decision between Knight and Middleton, and I think ultimately they made the right decision on which guy to re-sign. So the benefit of having acquired Carter Williams is that they got 2 seasons where his contract is very affordable. They're not hurting themselves from a salary cap perspective. And it was kind of taking a chance on a guy who, like you said, had been the rookie of the year previously. Now, Philadelphia was giving up on him, but Philadelphia was a team that was really, at that time, it was really tough to project when they ever wanted to be good. What did they really think was a good player? What wasn't a good player? They're kind of a strange situation. So overall, that trade hasn't worked out as well as the Bucks have hoped because Carter Williams hasn't progressed in the way that surely they would have liked him to. But on the other hand, it's a low-risk asset. They haven't really lost much by acquiring him. And now, by moving him to the bench, they've really made way for Giannis to take the reins. If they got a different point guard who would have maybe been showing subtle signs but still not been that good, maybe Giannis wouldn't have had the freedom to move into that point guard position and start putting up triple-doubles. So NBA is a weird, crazy, crazy puzzle. You know, putting together a team takes a lot of luck, and it takes a lot of foresight and a lot of learning from mistakes. The other good thing about Carter Williams is that he does seem to be good with the other guys. There seems to be good chemistry overall from a locker room perspective. Him and Giannis seem to be the best of friends. So you know, if you get a guy that at least gets along with everybody, if you have to release him eventually and he's not doing too much damage, there are worse things that could happen.
You know, Jeremy, along those lines, you talked about chemistry and getting along with teammates. It's a two-part question. Number one, Greg Monroe, some people have thought he's been a disappointment, at least defensively. However, one of the better plus-minuses on the team at minus 43. But now there's the him and Middleton issue. Can you delve a little bit deeper into what that's all about and the long-reaching impact that that could have on this team?
It's super weird, right? Like, it's very bizarre to see whatever's going on. I mean, there's a lot of times when guys kind of get into it a little bit during games, right? That first thing that they had during Boston where they kind of mixed it up a little bit on the bench and had a little bit of a blowout. You know, that could be guys missing assignments or guys trying to hold each other accountable, and sometimes it goes a little south because, you know, when you're in a game where things are getting close and you think you could win the game and one or two things goes wrong, it's common for guys to have little blowups like that. But this thing last game where Monroe seemed to blow off the handshake or the high five, those post-free throw high fives are almost a religious rite. It's almost, you know, the way that there's unwritten rules in baseball, an unwritten rule of basketball is that you give your teammate a high five whether he makes or misses that damn free throw, right? So for him to not get in there and give him the high five and then kind of almost reject it when Middleton came in, it was very curious. And, you know, I haven't seen too much. I'm sure this will be a hot topic tomorrow. I'm sure everybody's going to be asking Monroe and Middleton about it, but I suspect that they're going to show a united front. It's possible that Monroe's pretty frustrated with how things have gone of late, being moved to the bench. His minutes have been similar, but he has in some games not gotten the same clutch minutes that he got previously. Perhaps he's a little bit frustrated. Him and Middleton obviously have some kind of history going back to Detroit. I'm not really sure about the nature of their relationship, but this would be the first that we saw any signs of fractures on the chemistry in the locker room for the Bucks, because it seems like they've been a group that's gotten along famously in the last season, really the last two seasons.
Here with Jeremy Schmidt from BucksKickball.com. And here's a little interesting nugget too, where, you know, reading some reports about Dwight Howard saying that he wanted to go to the Bucks, but they would have to, they wanted him to opt in for the next season. If we could play, let's say that would have happened, how weird would it be to have Dwight Howard in Milwaukee as a Buck, and how would he fit into the offense?
Offensively, I think it'd be a pretty smooth fit, given that they have a post-up center right now in Greg Monroe. It would be easy to allot his post-up touches to Dwight Howard, and Howard does a lot of the same things well that, for example, Miles Plumlee or John Henson does well. So I think he would be able to function pretty well within what Milwaukee does, just from a pure basketball standpoint. As far as everything else goes, it seems like bringing him into any locker room always seems like a gamble. You know, Howard's that kind of – he's kind of the guy who thinks he's the funniest guy in the room, but he's actually the least funny guy in the room. He's got his own jokes that he thinks are funny, and it doesn't seem like anybody else really thinks they're funny. And I don't know if you've ever been around people like that, but they're about as grating as human beings as possible. So I can only imagine that it would have been at least a little bit challenging to try and fit somebody like that in the locker room over a two-month period. Now, that's probably why they wanted him to opt in for another season, so it's not just a short-term rental, because obviously this season's not really going in a promising direction from a win-loss standpoint. He would have probably made a positive impact there, but it would have been still tough for them to make the eighth seed. It would have been quite an experiment. It probably would have been as flashy a trade as the Bucks would have made since that Ray Allen for Gary Payton trade back in 2003. So ultimately, on a personal level, I'm glad it didn't work out. It just seems like his timing and the Bucks' timing, he's getting a little bit older. The Bucks are still a pretty young team. It didn't seem like everything aligned very smoothly. So ultimately, I think it's probably for the better for Milwaukee that he didn't end up coming over.
Jeremy, you touched on the Ray Allen trade. It made me think when that trade happened, I kind of equated to the first time the Titanic hit the iceberg before they knew they were going to sink. But speaking of which, again, the excitement is great for the future, and the arena finally got done, and that was something that really worried me as a longtime Milwaukeean and a Bucks fan for the last 38 years. But we look at the attendance, still dead last in attendance. Now, I know that this team right now isn't a playoff team, but at the beginning of the season, there was optimism, yet it didn't equate into the seats and into people buying tickets. Obviously, the newness of the new stadium when it opens or the new arena will bring fans in, at least for a year or two. But what does the Bucks ownership have to do to get Milwaukee to make feel like the Bucks are relevant? Because it still seems in sports circles, sports radio, newspaper, that the Bucks are still the third or fourth option when you talk about sports in Milwaukee. I think it's a shame.
Well, the obvious reason for that is the struggles the team's had over the past 30 years at this point. I wasn't alive really for most of the 80s. I was born in 86, so I don't remember exactly what the 1980s were like.
But you missed the good times. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I did, but I suspect that sports radio was probably largely about Brewers and Bucks at that time and not much about the Packers. Packers were going through a pretty down time, and it had been a while since they had been good at that point. And then the 90s came around, the Packers were rejuvenated, the Bucks weren't very good, and the Brewers weren't very good, so all anybody cared about was the Packers. And now the Packers have been pretty much good from 1992 up till now. So obviously this is Packer Nation, whether it's in Milwaukee or Green Bay or Madison. Packers are kind of the thing wherever you go. And almost all that is attributed to the success they've had. And it's almost generational success now. My dad's seen them be successful. I've seen them be successful. I have friends with very young kids who now have seen the Packers be successful. And it's just kind of getting passed down and passed down. My whole generation hasn't seen a successful Bucks team outside of the 3-year stretch from 98 to 2001, and then 1 year in 2009-10, and then 1 year last year. So until you build sustained success that kind of passes down generation to generation, I think you're going to have a hard time filling up the stadium every season, even in down years. Right now, the short-term and long-term path to success for the Bucks and path to a full arena is these young guys that they're investing in paying off and producing a lot of wins and being the kind of character guys that Milwaukee likes. If you can win and have guys that the fans can really get behind, that's kind of what's going to get you a full arena every night. And it seems like Jabari Parker is that kind of guy. It seems like Giannis is that kind of guy. So it seems like they're aware of this, and that's why, own the future, that's Jabari and Giannis.
And Jeremy, just looking forward ahead, before we let you go, we know you're a busy man, but they have four of their next five at home, starting with Minnesota on Friday. What should what should the team expect against the likes of Minnesota, Oklahoma City, going on the road, just a short trip to Chicago, but then against Miami and New Orleans for the next week and a half?
Yeah, when you talk about those four home games, Minnesota and New Orleans are two incredibly beatable teams. Some of these lineups that New Orleans has been trotting out this season, my God. They started Kendrick Perkins last night or tonight. There was a guy named DeJon Jones who I'd never heard of. He was in the starting lineup. Norris Cole they're putting out there. Omer Asik is one of their more reliable starters. It's a sad state of affairs outside of Anthony Davis in New Orleans. So certainly that's a winnable game. The game against Minnesota should be exciting. That's if I were, a paying customer type fan, I would not mind coming to check out Karl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins against Giannis and Jabari Parker. Should be an entertaining game. Minnesota plays a pretty up-tempo style, so That could be a reminiscent of that Rockets game from Monday and maybe even more favorable for the Bucks. So there's some good games coming up. Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, that's going to be tough. I wouldn't say that there's a lot of winnable games in there, but certainly there's two or three that they should be able to take down. But really the rest of the season is not about winning games as much as it's about can Giannis, Jabari, and Middleton play well, play together, and start to really show that the Bucks have something for next season and create a little bit of momentum, I guess.
Jeremy, we're going to let you go because I know you've got some things you have to take care of, but I'd like to get you on before the playoffs and talk about the rest of the NBA, including an Eastern Conference that has Toronto and Boston sitting in two of the top four spots, kind of a topsy-turvy East with the Bulls struggling, and then obviously everything in the West with the Spurs and the Warriors kind of running away with things. But so hopefully we can find some time for you in the next – or you can find some time for us in the next couple of weeks to start previewing the playoffs as we get closer to it.
Absolutely, guys. Yeah, I'd love to come back on. Like you said, the East is very, very different this season. It's more competitive, and everybody's just kind of pretty good. There's not the same number of bad teams that there usually are, and it's not quite so top-heavy. So, yeah, definitely let's find some time in the next couple of weeks. Love to come back on.
That's great. That was Jeremy Schmidt from Bucks Get Ball here on the Kielbasa Kings Sports Extravaganza, brought to you by Wren College Pads. Big thanks to Jeremy Schmidt of BuckSkipBall.com. Make sure you follow him at BuckSkipBall, BuckSkipBall. And big thanks to him. Big thanks to, again, Phil Mitten at HoopsMarinara. Follow us on Twitter ourselves at B5Q for Bucky's Fifth Quarter, at Kielbasa Kings WI, at Scott Wisniewski 2, and of course at Jake Coco B5Q. Wrapping up the show now, Scotty and I got a busy weekend. Scotty's doing himself having a wrestling show up in Fredonia for a great cause to fight cancer. Scott, you want to talk about that real quick before we take it home with some combine?
Well, yeah, real quick. head out to that show because all proceeds go to help finally cure cancer. If someday maybe it will become a reality. And you can help make that happen by showing up and watching what will be my second-to-last match ever. My last one will take place in May in La Crosse. I had my Milwaukee finale last Sunday. It was phenomenal, and I couldn't have been more pleased with how that event went. And, yeah, so there's that.
Excellent. With the Wisconsin Badgers, three of them competed in the NFL Scouting Combine week that was last week. You had offensive lineman Tyler Meritz. You had Joel Stave throwing as a quarterback. Had some pretty impressive numbers, actually, compared to a guy that was 6'5 and came in at 236. So he added about 16 pounds of muscle. And then Joe Schobert, who many are projecting to be a 3-4 inside linebacker and who, you know, maybe a mid-round pick. Who knows if Ted Thompson has his eyes looking at the athletic and impressive Joe Schobert. So with that, and obviously you and I have talked, I mean, there's been a couple of things, Scotty. You and I both know, and we've talked a lot about with just these former student-athletes now going into the professional game, just how you have those workout warriors, those freaks that all of a sudden they surprise and they bust out and, you know, they shoot up the charts. The other guys that don't test that well and maybe their stock drops a little bit. But when you see these Badgers, you know, I guess, you know, off the top of your head, I mean, Schobert, let's start with Joe. And he started with, let me just bring it up there, came at about over 6'1", about 244 pounds, ran the 40-yard dash in about 4.76 officially with a 10-yard split of 1.63. Yeah, he showed some nice bench press 22 times, 225. It looks like with what he had, he looked like he's very fluid, and especially with the mobile drills, he looks like a good 3-4 linebacker, and which is a lot to say, especially with a former former walk-on and now two-year starter and the Big Ten linebacker of the year.
Yeah, he's gonna find his way on a roster, and he's going to have he's going to be an overachiever. He kind of fits that mold. He's going to be a guy who will impress and do things that are beyond some of his skill levels. And more importantly, the intangibles aside, he's a player. You know what I mean? Like he's just a player. And I think that a lot of times when you go to the combine, everybody goes through their measurables and this and that, and I'll pick them apart that way. But in the end, I think that people lose the emphasis on whether or not somebody can just flat-out play. And I think in the end, you're going to find out that Schobert can just flat-out play.
And you look at Joel Stave, from what I saw from him throwing the ball, and I know Kurt Warner had some interesting talk just about some of the footwork maybe needing some work, but he compensated well with a strong upper body. He seemed to swing the ball or sling the ball, spin the ball pretty well on Saturday. And and obviously, and I've talked to, with this book project that I'm working on, I've talked to a bunch of players and coaches talk and media just talking about Joel Staba and just his intangibles, but also what he went through and being like the most polarized, basically the most polarizing quarterback since Mike Samuel, and probably one of the more polarizing student athletes Wisconsin's had, along with Trayvon Jackson. But, you know, I think teams are going to give him a look. I really feel that. Obviously, he's smart. He's highly intelligent. He's an engineering major. He has the intangibles in terms of height. He ran a 4.8 40, which I know doesn't really mean too much for top end speed for a quarterback, but he displayed some athleticism at the combine. I mean, I think he's going to get a shot at the NFL. He's going to sign on to the team. I'm not saying I don't know if he'll be a late round pick per se, depending upon individual workouts, but I think he'll. I mean, he'll wind up at some camp. I think he's. I mean, he has a shot to be a backup quarterback in this league.
Yeah, perhaps. I mean, I didn't think Scott Tolzien would ever be a backup NFL quarterback. So, and he's proven to be. So, yeah, I guess, sure. I think he's got just as much of a chance as anybody.
And with that. Yeah, then Tyler Merritt, who didn't necessarily test out that well in terms of bench and the 40. But I will say, though, that both Robbie Havenstein of the now L.A. Rams did not bench well. I think he had 16 reps at 225, upped it to about 20 at the pro day last year and was selected in the second round. Did not allow a sack, according to Pro Football Focus, this season. And then Travis Frederick, who ran like a 5.54, which is very comparable to what Merritt's ran this past week. And of course, he was a Pro Bowl he's a Pro Bowl caliber player as well. So
My point exactly. Again, not to beat a dead horse, but let's just put it out there. If you can run a 4.440 and I can run a 4.5. But I'm just a better football player than you. It stinks that you might get drafted ahead of me because of silliness. Or you can bench 225 15 times, and I can do it 20. But you're going to not get beat in the trenches, and I'm going to not stay focused, and that strength means nothing when I'm allowing sacks and getting my franchise quarterback killed. But, you know, I don't want to go on and on about it, but you understand where I'm coming from.
Absolutely. So, obviously, I'll be down there at Pro Day next Wednesday with Owen Reese, one of our bookies fifth quarter, kind of our draft analyst, our scout, if you will, in terms of breaking that down. Next week, like Scotty mentioned, we have a lot to talk about: conference tournaments, NFL free agency. We have women's hockey doing really well, obviously, and then also you have just a lot going on. So it's gonna be a jam packed show. We'll let you guys know when that is. Scott, anything else before we really take it home, brother?
No, that pretty much covers it.
All right, well, guys, thanks for tuning in for the Polish Rifle. Scott Wisniewski, this is Jay Kokorowski. Big thanks again to Phil Mitten and Jeremy Schmidt for joining us on this edition of the Kielbasa King Sports Extravaganza, brought to you by Brent College Pads and a very proud part of Bucky's fifth quarter.
Accordion solo, American Polka, played by Mr. John J. Kimball, Edison Record. ¶¶